Tonight, hey, it was BYOG, bring your own guts.
There goes Davis.
Oh, my God.
Davis is going to run it all the way back. Auburn's going to win the football game. Auburn's going to win the football game. He ran the missed field goal back. He ran it back 109 yards. They're not going to keep him off the field tonight.
Caught, racing, touchdown, Nittany Lions. We've got a ball game in Necktown.
But, sweetheart, this pick is strictly business.
Hello, Heisman.
That is right. Welcome in to the College Football Country Podcast. Josh Parcell, Rossi Three Stacks. We're here for another edition of the pod. Week two is here. We got some good games, not a ton. It's not the best week of college football, but honestly, at this point, I'm just happy there's football at all. We're even going to get some Big Ten football in a couple of weeks. We've got a lot to get into in the show today. Make sure you guys are downloading the podcast every single time and subscribing and telling your friends about it, your enemies, whoever it might be. Spread the word about the podcast. We're doing it twice a week all season long for you guys. Really excited to be able to bring you the podcast more so than ever here in 2020. So keep it going. Spread the word. And then with that, I welcome in Rossi Three Stacks. What's going on, Rossi?
Josh, I'm doing well. We made it to week two. Not the same can be said for every team on this weekend's slate. Yep. But we made it here at least. We're doing well, man. We're doing well. I won't lie, it's been a grind of a week. I told you this separately. Had a little expensive repair on the car. Shout out to our old friend Mitch. Somehow broke my trunk a few weeks ago and finally got it fixed. That was not an inexpensive fix. And then the very next morning, Josh, after I texted you that, my laptop wouldn't start.
No.
And it died.
You're kidding.
So, I'm not.
Died? Because, like, when your laptop dies, like, it turns off. Are we talking it? I mean, it is rest in peace died?
Dead. D-E-D, dead. It is rest in peace, dead. Fortunately, that's a business expense, so yada yada. I don't need to get into it. Tax write-off is all it really is. Mm. But still, boy, was it an expensive week. This is the gambling gods paying me back for going 4-0 last week and teasing a game instead of parlaying it. They're like, hey, dude, remember how much money you could have made? Here it is. You owe it all back to the universe.
The gambling gods giveth, they taketh away.
They
That's
do.
Fantastic. Well, like you said, Ross, we did make it to week two, but not all of us made it because Charlotte and UNC, we were excited for this game. I just, as a guy who lives in Charlotte, you know me, last week I gave you all of the info you would ever need to know about Charlotte football.
The king of Charlotte football.
I am the expert on the Charlotte 49ers. And I was excited for this game. The line was 28. I thought UNC was going to smoke them. I was going to lay the 28 with Carolina. But we don't even get the game. Charlotte cancels it. Now, I think we have to be very clear here about something. I don't know that this has been an issue, but I'm just going to get out ahead of this for anybody who doesn't understand why this game was canceled. There is not an outbreak at Charlotte. In fact, their positive test rate for all student athletes is 0.6%. Their positive rate this week on the 200 tests that they administered on Monday is 0.5%. But because of some contact tracing protocol,
right. All
of their offensive linemen, it feels like, I don't even know if they actually said exactly how many it is, but too many offensive linemen are out. So it was going to be hard enough to play Carolina as it is. Kind of can't do it without an offensive line. So it's more of a contact tracing issue than it is an outbreak issue, which is great news for Charlotte. Obviously, tough news that they're not going to get to play the game. But thankfully, you know, there's not some sort of outbreak on the team. But either way, this is the question I have for you, Ross. And you know, look, every college football fan has asked this question 100 times in the last 6 months. But as we've seen some games get moved around early in the season, I mean, ACC has had some issues, Virginia Tech, the Big 12 has had a couple issues already. We'll see the SEC kick off in a week. Do you think that the schedule we have right now for all these conferences, assuming that's the full schedule, do you think we will play a full season?
No, I do not. Yeah. I think it's too early. Thus far, we've already seen so many games get pushed back. And I don't know if it's teams that are doing it. Like, the Charlotte example is a perfect one. Like, we literally do not have enough offensive linemen that are able to play this weekend based on your protocols. There are other situations, like, who knows, like NC State pushing back the opener. That was maybe more of a, like, didn't have time to practice issue. But point being, we're 2 weeks into the season and having all these games canceled. I just don't see any way that this season goes off entirely as planned. And I know that it was already kind of starting to spread last week that there need to be at least 8 teams in the ACC actively playing, or else they might just cancel the whole thing. My concern, Josh, is once we get a few weeks into the season and some teams start losing, I worry that that's when we might start seeing more of the outbreak scenario, when guys are just a lot less compliant with all the protocols that these schools have put in place and are working really hard to uphold. It's really easy to be compliant with these things that are, like, admittedly uncomfortable and not a lot of fun for these kids, but it's worth it for them when they've got their football season ahead of them, or maybe they're playing for a championship, whatever. What happens if you're 0-3 or you're 1-4? Like, I think you lose some of that drive to stay in on a Friday and Saturday night and not go out. Like, I worry about that and the impact that could then have later on the year if we get more and more cancellations as the lower level teams in the league or in the leagues start seeing outbreaks.
That's a really good point that I had not heard before, and it makes perfect sense. I mean, it wasn't that long ago you and I were in school, and I know plenty of people that, I mean, athletes or guys that just, we knew that if they were athletes, if they didn't have something to look forward to, I mean, very different situation here. Not apples and oranges, I guess, but like my senior year of college, I needed 6 credit hours to graduate, like my last semester. Like, I didn't have a lot to work for right in school, so I was going out a little bit more. I was hitting the bars 4 nights a week, 5 nights a week, because there just wasn't a lot motivating me to just focus on my studies. So for an athlete, if you don't have a lot to look forward to, you're less likely to follow rules that, like you said, might be uncomfortable. So, yeah, that could be an issue. I'm trying to think, what is like a what's a school that's going to be bad that's also a great party school? I'm trying to, like Ole Miss. We might have to watch out for Ole Miss in about 4 weeks if the Rebs get off to a slow start. We might have to worry about Lane Kiffin being out in the bars in Oxford more so than the players. But yeah, I think that's a really good point. And you know, we haven't come across that yet. I mean, we already had we had Memphis getting on a party bus after a win week one, which is. That story did not get enough attention. That they allowed that to happen. It is crazy to me. But yeah, I think that's a great point. As far as the UNC game, so there was some talk about this idea that Clemson is also off next week. That's never going to happen. There is zero chance that Clemson, because Clemson and UNC don't play. They're not on the schedule. So that would just be adding a game. That there's no reason that financially, competitively, Clemson has nothing to gain from that. And I don't even really know what UNC, I mean, I guess UNC could pull off an upset, right? And it would be a huge win. But I don't know if I'm Carolina, that after the way we looked against Syracuse, I'd want my next game to be against Clemson with basically only a week's notice that you're even playing the game.
Yeah, absolutely not. That's, I mean, it's fun to talk about because they're open. I get the value in talking about it, but it's of course not going to happen. I think most likely you're going to see a group of 5 team, like a Western Kentucky is a name that's been thrown around a couple times. I know Carolina fans want Coastal Carolina, our Chanticleers, to come up. I think they're off, but they maybe already have a full schedule. There's a couple teams. It's really funny though. Apparently Bubba Cunningham, Carolina's athletic director, said today that, an athletic director from another school called him today and said, "We will play you this weekend. We can be there tomorrow."
What?
Yeah. Of course they're not going to do that, but
was it Ohio State?
Yeah, probably. we will scrimmage you this weekend. We've been practicing nonstop for a month. Yeah, no, it's, I think that's the most likely. What I think they should do though, I planned it all out. So you move UNC Boston College up a week to the 26th.
Yep.
Boston College is supposed to play Texas State that day. Move that back a week. Texas State is off. UNC is then open on October 3rd, which gives them the flexibility to play someone else if other issues arise for other teams, or they can just move someone else up on their schedule. So right off the bat, Wake, Notre Dame, and Miami, teams they play later in the season that are also off that week. I don't think you want to play Notre Dame and Miami right there, but I'm like – 80% serious about this plan. I think they need to try to get as many games in as they can, when they can, and give themselves the flexibility down the line. Like, I think the only way you can get through a season like this is if you have a lot of bye weeks or flex days kind of later in the year. So I'm 80% serious. I really think they should aggressively try to move some games around to get some of these in earlier when they can.
I love that. And, you know, I don't think I heard you say it. Maybe you did, but Texas State is off October 3rd. So do is move that game back. I mean, BC can still play Texas State because, you know, let's be honest, BC is doing Texas State a favor by playing that game. And I'm sure BC would love to play it. It's one of the few games they're going to win this season. So they'd like to play it if they can. But the conference games need to be the priority.
Yep.
I think that's a great idea. And, you know, for Carolina, you know, I was on, you know, my radio show in Charlotte today. We were talking to Roddy Jones, and we asked Roddy, you know, how would it affect Carolina if they don't play for 3 weeks? Is that a really big negative for them? He said it was. He was like, look, that's basically like starting your season all over. It's, you know, it's going to really disrupt continuity, which I understand that, and there's some legitimacy to that. But I do think that even if they are off next week and they don't find a replacement game and they just have a couple of bye weeks and they play Boston College, you still get that BC game before you go play Virginia Tech. I mean, I'm not that worried about Carolina. It's not like their next game. If their next game was against Clemson or their next game was against Notre Dame, then
yeah, you'd need a tune-up.
Exactly. Yeah. But I don't really see them needing that. So we'll see what happens with that. But to me, it'd be awesome if they could move the BC game up. The Clemson thing's not going to happen, but yeah. Real quickly, Ross, before we move on, actually, let's hit on this. News out of Carolina. So big news on the field for them. Miles Wolfolk is done. He is ineligible. Academic issues. They reportedly said it's because of a grad school issue, late on some work. I'm not really sure what that means, but let's just talk about the on-field impact. So talk to me about why that's a big deal for Carolina. They had a lot of banged up guys in the secondary, including him last year.
Yep. Yeah. He played the first four games, had three interceptions in their first four games last year. And then got knocked out against App State. One of a string of injuries they had right around that time. I mean, he's a really good player. He was, I thought, really impressive against Syracuse. Didn't make any real mistakes. Had one really nice play, forcing a receiver out of bounds after he caught the ball. Is kind of one of their only veteran guys in the back of that secondary, kind of taking the Miles Dorn role from a year ago, is very much the quarterback of that defense. In Jay Bateman's defense, a lot of the calls kind of come from the back forward. So it's a big deal on the field. Like, there's really no way to spin it otherwise. I guess if you are an optimistic Carolina fan and a realistic one who's thinking 2021 is the year, the way you got to look at this is like, well, now young guys like Cameron Kelly, Geo Bigger, so an interception at the end of the game against Syracuse. They've got this freshman who's a stud, Jaquarius Conley, going to be an NFL player, but like now suddenly he's going to have to play a lot right away. So I guess long-term, maybe it's an okay thing that next year, all those guys are going to have a lot of experience from this year, but no question, it's a big loss. He was certainly one of the better players in their defense.
Yeah, no question. And after what they went through last year, you know, losing guys already in the defense can be tough for them because that offense is great, but the defense is, I think, going to be the key between them being a good team and a team that actually challenges for that number two spot in the ACC.
Yep.
All right, Ross, there is a lot of just stuff that we have to get into.
It was a big week of stuff, baby.
Just stuff. I feel like that might be the name of the segment moving forward, is just stuff in college football, because I don't even know where to begin. Let's start with the Big Ten deciding that they are in fact going to play. Wild couple of weeks for the Big Ten, really month and a half for the Big Ten. But Ryan Day and Nebraska and Iowa, they're getting their way. They're going to play Big Ten football again. Unanimous vote. The amount of twists and turns that story took over the last 2 months is honestly impossible to follow. Like, I stopped paying close attention to it because every day there was a report about, they're close to this vote and they're considering this day. It's like, just tell me once they've made up their minds. I don't care about what leaked report is, you know, coming out this day. I just want to know when there's actually been a vote. We finally got one. And Christine Brennan of the USA Today wrote a column. I have not read the column. I will not read the column. But I did read the headline, and I read what she repeated in, I guess, an interview on NPR, that the Big Ten voting to play football again this season with daily testing and very stringent contact tracing and quarantine and isolation protocols in place, with all of that, returning to play football is the darkest day in Big Ten history. The same conference that, as many people have pointed out on Twitter, all right, I am not the first person to point this out. The same conference that has had not one, not two, not three, but four that I know of major, like, national sexual assault scandals, like actually horrific stories by four different schools, had a player tragically pass away during a football workout several years ago at Maryland. Like, very sad, very awful stories that have come out of this league. The decision to play football again after medical experts and doctors all signed off on the safety of returning to play, this is the darkest day in Big Ten history. What an unbelievable... I mean, I called it yellow journalism on Twitter. Like, I was angry. I mean, I was fired up. Like,
you were mad online.
I was extremely mad online. There is no way in which you can justify that comment, calling it the darkest day. That's, I mean, all you're doing is trying to get attention. And she got it. Good for her. But I was blown away. What did you think when you saw that?
Oh, man, it was a take and a half. All I could think of was, like, I wish somebody could go back and like, dub over the famous Franklin Delano Roosevelt speech about Pearl Harbor yesterday, December 7th, 1941, a date which will live in infamy in the United States. It was a date which will live in infamy in the Big Ten.
I mean, what are we?
We were attacked by the presidents of this prestigious academic conference.
We will rue the day.
Yeah, it's like or Churchill talking about, like, our darkest hour, I guess our finest hour, whatever. It'll make it seem like the Big Ten was just committed some, like, an atrocity.
Right.
Travesty. To your point, I think you said it right. Like, they went about this in a vote based on feedback from medical experts and stuff they're seeing around the country, and that's your take? I mean, whew, a take and a half, to be sure. No, I'm with you. I didn't read it either. I saw the headline, which I hate doing, but, like, come on, Christine. That's a little much. Let's just pump the brakes, sister.
And look, I'm with you. Like, I read articles. I try not to judge based on headlines, but the reason I feel perfectly comfortable with this is that she doubled down in multiple tweets afterwards that were not part of the story. She went on NPR in an interview and said the same thing. So this is not the case where there was a misleading headline that didn't really tell the story of the article. Like, she clearly believes this. She doubled down. She tripled down on this, that she believes this is the darkest day in Big Ten history. And I it's unbelievable to me. I do not believe, I think it has been way overblown, this concept that there are people rooting for the virus or rooting against college football, yeah, and that these sports writers hate the sports that they cover. I think that is, for the most part, I think that's ridiculous. But stuff like this is just so, it is so attention seeking. The thirst for attention for this is crazy. And the part that made me even more irritated than just saying it's the darkest day is when she said that was the day when they became the SEC.
Yeah.
As if, like, the amount of prejudice towards just the South, generalizing the South, which is always an issue, and the amount of what is the word, like, elitism coming from, like, a Midwest journalist like Christine Brennan looking down on the SEC, which, by the way, the SEC has been the best conference at navigating this so far. They've been the most patient. Like, if you had to bet back in May, right, when we were in the middle of the pandemic, things were getting bad and we weren't sure when we were going to play football, whatever. If you had to bet what's going to be the first conference to play, you would have said SEC.
Without question.
And they're going to be the last. Well, I guess not the last. It's going to be the Big Ten. But of the schools of the conferences that didn't actually cancel, they were the most patient. I mean, it's a compliment to call them the SEC.
Yeah, no, it's such a bizarre take. I think sensationalism at its finest. I also pictured it as, you know, the clip of that lady just screaming no and like on her knees after Trump got elected. I'm just picturing Christine Brennan as that when she heard the news.
I mean,
it's a mess, man. I'm certainly glad they're playing. I'm glad that they feel they're in a place to play. And like, look, cash rules everything around me, man. They started looking at the books. They thought that there was a way to safely play. And as soon as they had a little glimmer, they went for it because they saw what the financial implications were going to be. So
yeah,
it is what it is. They're going to move forward as best they can like everybody else.
Well, and the Big Ten's biggest problem before we do move on is that had they just changed one word in their initial announcement, they could have avoided a lot of this. And that is changing the word canceled to the word postponed.
Yep.
If they had simply said we are postponing the season pending further research and information so that we feel comfortable moving forward, you would not be in this situation. But you said canceled, and as everybody has said, all that was so irrational, so quick to make a decision that it felt like they, and I've seen this opinion floating around too, and it's true that they misjudged the room, that they wanted to try to be the first to, along with the Pac-12, to try to be put the player safety first and all that stuff, which is great. Like, you should be putting player safety first, but to out and out cancel the season when there was still clearly a pathway to play, even if it wasn't clear at the time, that was a mistake on the Big Ten's part. But thankfully, Ross, David Hookstead, who I've never heard of before until 2 days ago, whose Twitter bio says he's the king of Wisconsin athletics. I don't know what this dude does. If somebody out there can tweet at us and tell us who this guy actually is, he looks like maybe he's a TV reporter. I don't know. It's hard to tell. But
dude, he's a warrior.
So apparently, I don't know. Maybe you know the background on this guy. All I know is that when this vote happened a couple of days ago, this dude, David Hookstead, tweeted. I'm going to read the tweet verbatim, okay, so you guys can hear it the same way that I heard it earlier this week. I've spent the past 188 days fighting to save Big Ten football. Today, we accomplished the mission. It gets better. Much like the Osama bin Laden raid, or D-Day, you never know when your number will be called to serve. All you hope for is to execute your job and the mission. We did just that.
Oh, my God.
Like, so honestly, not to get political, but I could have seen Trump saying this because Trump actually, like, talked to Kevin Warren.
Sure, what
the,
yeah.
I just want to know, what did he do? Do we know the story of this guy? Do you have any idea?
I have absolutely no idea. No,
who is this guy?
I had never heard of him either until you shared that tweet with me earlier this week. No, it's hilarious. That makes it all the better. If it was this like figure that we really knew of, I mean, to your point, if this were Trump or even like a Clay Travis,
right,
being like, we did it.
Right.
Like, I went to war for you. I did it. Like, no idea who this guy is, but I love that in his mind, he stormed the beaches of Normandy, got up in front of the nation with Kevin Warren and said, ladies and gentlemen, we got it.
What a world. I just want to know what, like, he's taking credit for this and I don't know why, but I don't have them saved, but go look at this guy's Twitter page. He has even more gems. If you go look at what he's been tweeting since they accomplished this, like, this dude is crazy. And like, legitimately, I thinks he's the president of the United States. He is taking credit for everything. And yeah, I don't even know what he does, but shout out to David Hookstead. Thanks. You saved the Big Ten. Let's give you a round of applause.
You never know when your number will be called to serve.
Like Osama bin Laden.
so good. It's like he's been waiting around his whole life. Like, this is it, Dave Hookstead. This is your time to shine, pal.
It's incredible.
It's amazing. What a week for takes. And it gets even a little better, I think.
It does get a little bit better. So let's jump to the Pac-12. Where Gavin Newsom gave a press conference earlier this week. He's the governor of California. And according to the Mercury News, John Wilner was the writer for this piece. Newsom was asked a bunch of questions. I didn't listen to the press conference, but reading in this, he was asked questions about, you know, how they could return to play football. And the Pac-12 is apparently closing in on, you know, maybe returning too, which is huge news because, you know, the Pac-12, it just has a lot more, you know, legal ramifications and restrictions on, you know, how many people can be gathered and all that stuff. So the Pac-12 is in a little bit different spot, but Gavin Newsom sounds like he's ready to make an exception and let them play football again. Here was his answer. He said teams can find workarounds to 11-on-11 practices. They can have walkthroughs. They can practice against air. They can use virtual reality and tackle dummies. Which, like, okay, so far so good. Like, that's
training camp.
Right, yep. not that bad. Then it gets into some weird stuff. They can use mental exercises. Those are all means by which a team can conduct practice and prepare for a game. Then the writer says he responded at some point during the season, during a game week, a football team will need 22 players on the field, offense against defense, 11-on-11 with some degree of contact. The official, so I guess this wasn't Gavin Newsom, this was another state official, responded that the teams could prepare by playing 5-on-5. So there you go. The Pac-12, the return to play, they're going to revolutionize the sport. 5-on-5 practices, and they're gonna take down Bama. Can you imagine?
I mean, I guess this is just like turning into a backyard football league or something like that. Just like we got maybe an all-time QB that could limit one person on the field at all times. Like, man, no, that's – what are they going to do? Guys, come on. That is a preposterous take, obviously. I love, though, that he's giving answers that he or she clearly does not actually believe in or like just really understand. Just like reciting these talking points. Like, well, yeah, they can use mental exercises. Hilarious.
All right, so here's my thing. Are we sure that we want state and federal government officials being football experts? Like a few months ago, there was the hearing in the Senate where a bunch of senators were asking questions to, I don't remember, like coaches, administrators, commissioners, whatever. Mark Emmert, I think, was there. And they were asking the dumbest questions. Like, I think one of, like, Lindsey Graham asked, like, oh, you know, we don't want college recruiting to turn into a, you know, a bidding war and stuff that's, like, very obviously happening all over college football. And everyone's making fun of them, right? And then I'm like, well, okay, two things. One, why don't we flip this around and have – Ed Orgeron speak on foreign policy for 2 minutes and see how he does.
Right.
And two, like, do we, like, I'm actually kind of glad that the guys that are supposed to be, you know, governing our country aren't sitting down for 12 hours on a Saturday and watching college football. Everybody's making fun of these guys. And I'm like, I think this is actually a good thing. Like, I'd be a little worried if the guys who are like determining whether or not we go to war and like whether we have health care and if we're taxed and stuff or spending 6 hours on Saturday, you know, watching the SEC.
Yeah, no, that's fair. It is fair. I get that. Any sort of time you get people from Congress, though, doing those hearings, the questioning gets to be hilarious. My favorite one of all time was Zuckerberg.
Yeah, I was about to say the Facebook stuff. That's exactly what I was thinking about.
It was so funny. People were like, just clearly did not understand what his role was like in relation to the internet. They're just like asking him this question, and he's like, "Congresswoman, I'm sorry, but like, you'd have to ask Google." No, God, but I'm with you. It is funny that. Look, we're all trying to figure out what this is. Like, clearly at some level, you're in a certain state and like the state representatives have to have a certain say in what the rules are. But it is very funny when you ask people like that to like have enough knowledge about something to make an educated legislative decision on it. And they just can't. I mean, stuff like that, you're exactly right. They don't need to know about football but I guess if I could really get into it, I would hope that they would lean on people who do know what they're talking about. But anyway, I digress there.
Right.
This was a great press conference. So funny. And I hope the Pac-12 comes back, and I hope they get to do a little more practicing than 5-on-5 and visualization exercises.
5-on-5. Oh, man. My thought, too, on that is that I could see, like, the Pac-12 and just the West Coast in general. I shouldn't generalize the Pac-12, but most of the West Coast, they just don't have the appetite for football. It just doesn't exist. And some of that is political, but, you know, some of that is just the, you know, geography. It's
cultural, man. I mean, you lived in Santa Monica for a little while. And, like, I mean, I remember you saying when you were out there, like, there's just a lot more to do out here. And, like, the weather's nice and there's the beach. And just, like, people don't care about the same stuff. Like, dude, you go up to the Midwest, and I'm going to generalize the same way we were criticizing them for generalizing the South. But, like, you go up there and it's cold and like kind of dreary for a lot of the year. Like, there's not all of the amenities that you get in a bigger city or on the coast. And those people, like, live and breathe football, and, like, they go to bars and they drink, and, like, we've kind of taken that away from them. So, like, it's just a much bigger part of the culture there than it is out West. It is ingrained in the culture in the Midwest and in the South. Just much less ingrained there. So it's easier for them to be like, yeah, we won't play this year, which to most people in America is like, yeah, of course. Like, why wouldn't you just do that? Just don't play this year. But for everybody else, like, no, this is a huge part of our life, frankly. As crazy as it sounds, but, you know, you're spot on. There's just a big cultural difference there. It's a generalization, but I think for the most part, it's pretty true.
Which is why I believe that after, 10 years after the Pac-12 nearly pillaged the Big 12, I think that we could see the exact opposite happen in the next few years.
Yep.
I think that if I'm USC, because there are a handful of schools in the Pac-12 that really do take college football seriously.
Sure. Yep.
Oregon absolutely is one of those. USC, Washington, to a lesser degree, you can make a case for, like, Colorado, Arizona State. But I think if I'm the Big 12, I go get USC. I go get Oregon. I would take Washington, and I would even maybe dabble in, like a Colorado or Utah. Utah definitely takes college football very seriously. That's a great program. I would go get four, maybe even six schools from that league, and bring them on. And I mean, look, there's going to be some politics. Like, if USC is going, is UCLA coming with them? Like, I don't know. Like, it could get a little interesting, but I wonder about the Pac-12. There's so many issues with the Pac-12. I mean, their network has been a mess, and there's a lot of other concerns with that league. And, you know, you factor in what's happening right now, how this could change the future of that conference for good. If I'm USC, I'm eager to leave. And I would love to go jump to the Big 12, which credit to the Big 12 where it is due. They survived a very, turbulent couple of years where, you know, they weren't sure if they were going to make it. And now they're doing pretty well. I don't really understand why West Virginia is still in the league. But, you know, other than that, they're just fine. So anyway, that's something to keep an eye on. But after all that, Ross, all the amazing, crazy, wild takes, wild rides we had this week, the wildest ride of them all came from Elijah Judy. I don't know if this guy, I don't think he's related to Jerry Judy. He does have the same name, which is kind of a unique name, but Elijah Judy is a 4-star defensive end, top 200 prospect from New Jersey. And he tweeted this week, so he was a Georgia commit. And he tweeted earlier this week, I don't follow recruiting. Like, that's not my thing. I certainly don't follow Georgia recruiting. And so the first I heard of this guy, Tom Van Haren, great ESPN recruiting reporter, retweeted this, and I just happened to click on it. And the tweet reads as this. This is from Elijah. I know there's been a lot of rumors saying that I will be decommitting from Georgia. I've been fighting and debating it for a couple of months now, and I've came to the conclusion that I have to do what is best for me. So with that being said, I will be decommitting from Georgia. What a roller coaster.
Wild ride.
I tweeted this. I said, honestly, A-plus for story arc. Like, you great, great rising action, little climax, a plot twist. And after all that, the rumors, I've heard the rumors. And after a lot of thought, the rumors are true. I'm decommitting.
Hilarious. No, and you compared it to Pert Hapley. So this is Pert Hapley decommitting from Georgia. I actually, if we're sticking in Parks and Rec references, my mind immediately went to Councilman Dexhart when he had a press conference addressing his latest scandal and said, recently certain allegations have come to light about my inappropriate conduct. I'm here to set the record straight. I totally did all of it.
That is perfect.
Oh, that is, it's so good. Well, sorry, Elijah. Best of luck wherever you end up. Sorry,
yeah.
Georgia, you guys will be fine. But, man, if you're going to – he didn't even say respect my decision, which is, I think, disappointing part of a decommitment. Like, did you really decommit if you didn't ask your people to respect your decision? Yeah. I don't think so.
And no interviews, please? I mean, yeah, come on, man. Yeah, this is –
that's a shame.
That's a weak decommitment from Elijah. Yeah, we're rooting for you, Elijah, but I just – like, the whole point of it, the whole setup, it makes it seem as if, like, because I feel like this happens in recruiting, right? Like, oh, there's buzz, oh, kid's going to decommit. Yep. And sometimes a recruit will tweet out, like, 100% committed, like, exactly. Bulldog for life. And, like, the whole time I'm thinking that's what this tweet's going to be. And then at the end he's like, no, yeah, actually, I am decommitting.
So funny.
Oh, it's so great. I got to love 17-year-old kids can't make up their mind. That is fantastic. All right. You know what, Ross? We're going to jump right into Buy the Boat. We're going to move to our picks of the week. As you said at the beginning of the show, you're 4-0 last week. You were on fire. Yeah. You spent all that money on a new laptop, but let's see what we can win this week. We got to buy a boat this week. So you were 4-0. I was 2-2. Let's go down the line here. Let's start. Man, I should have ordered these games differently because we're going to start with the big one, but let's go for it. Miami and Louisville. This to me is the game of the weekend. Two top
Absolutely.
Top 20 teams, technically. Kind of weird saying that because they're not actually top 20 teams, but no Big Ten, Pac 12. So sure enough, they're top 20 teams. We're going to go with it. Well, mark it as a top 25 game. I can't wait till there's like a top 10 showdown. It's just not, yeah, we're going to have some of these coming up down the line. It's just, yeah. We all know what the deal is. Miami at Louisville, though. So, you know, Louisville kind of a up and down win last week against a pretty good Western Kentucky team. I mean, no disrespect to Western Kentucky, but Miami also another great win over Conference USA team. We liked that game, 31-14. We talked about that on Tuesday's pod. So the line is 2.5 here. I've gone back and forth on it. I'll leave the floor to you. You're the gambling expert. You're the guy who went 4-0. Well, so you tell me who to pick.
Take it easy. Let's take it easy over there. Take it easy. Yeah. So this probably actually is not a game that I feel super strongly about, but I actually do like Miami +2.5 here. I don't know why. I thought more about De'Aaron King. I know we talked about him a lot earlier this week. I feel like Miami is going to start the season hot. I know Louisville is a very good team. I watched the condensed version, thank you to the ACC Digital Network, of their game against Western Kentucky, and boy, are they good on offense. I think Miami, though, traditionally, and seems like this year, has a lot of speed, a lot of talent on defense. I think they'll be able to neutralize some of that. And I just think De'Aaron King is going to give a questionable Louisville defense a lot of trouble. So I've got Miami winning this one in somewhat of a shootout for Miami standards, somewhere in the 35-31 range.
Does feel like a high-scoring game. Miami is the more complete team. Louisville's defense is still a work in progress. That was the weakness last year. They were a sub-100 defense in a couple categories, so definitely an issue. I think the biggest concern I have in this game is Louisville's offensive line trying to protect Miami's front four. Even without Gregory Rousseau, it's still a really good front four for Miami. And Louisville last year, they were 130th in the country in tackles for loss allowed. Meaning, like, they got tackled for loss a lot. And crazy for an offense that was that good, right? So I'm worried about Miami getting pressure and maybe creating some negative plays, which in a game where both offenses are pretty good, you know, a couple of turnovers or punts, I mean, could be the difference in the game. So initially I was thinking of Miami, but I'm going to take Louisville. And I'm betting on the coaching staff. I'm betting on Scott Satterfield and Louisville, who, if you remember last year, came out of the gates, looked excellent against Notre Dame compared to what we thought they would. And they lost the game, but they were, you know, overmatched talent-wise against Notre Dame last year and still put up a great fight. Satterfield, going back to App State, those programs, or the teams that he added that program, always prepared. I trust in that staff more than I do in Manny Diaz's staff. Last year, Miami was a team that you never knew what you were going to get. Some weeks they would look pretty good, and then the next week they'd lay a complete egg. And I know that this is a different team, and De'Aaron King is much more dynamic than anything they had last year, and that could be a difference. But I'm going to trust in Louisville because I think, look, It doesn't matter how good the defense is. If you score, you score. And I think Louisville's going to score, even as good as Miami's defense can be. So I'm going to lay Louisville 2.5 here. I mean, I don't know if these teams – I don't think they were supposed to play originally. If this was a game where there were fans and there was a crowd and it was a night game at Louisville, I would love Louisville. They'd probably be a bigger favorite here. But I'll take Louisville cautiously because my gut at first said Miami, more complete team, but – I'm going to go with the coaching staff. I'm going to trust Scott Satterfield over Manny Diaz in this spot. That's basically what it comes down to. Elsewhere in the ACC, though, Ross, we got UCF and we got Georgia Tech.
Yeah.
Our boys, Georgia Tech, they pulled off the upset last week. You picked them, not on the podcast, but full credit where credit is due. You had that game. I think we had the under in that game, too. We liked a lot in the Georgia Tech FSU game, which was good. So now they get to play UCF. This is a much, much tougher test. And if Georgia Tech doesn't win that game last week, I think this line is closer to 14, but it's 7.5. And I think that is way too short of a line for Georgia Tech, who's better, but they're not that much better. And I think they beat a Florida State team that was ripe for the picking last week. UCF is not going to take this game lightly. This is a chance for them to beat. I don't care if Georgia Tech's one of the worst teams in the ACC. UCF is not going to walk into a game against a Power 5 team and just show up and think they're going to win. This is a game where they can make a statement. I think UCF wins this game by more than 7.5. I take the Knights.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think certainly like 7.5. This would be the first game that we would put in the Rossi 3 Stacks teaser of the week for sure.
Yep.
Teasing them down to 0.5, like just basically a pick 'em, is awesome. And I actually would be tempted by the under in this game. I think UCF people look at as a pretty explosive offense, and I think rightfully so. They are eerily similar from doing a lot of off-season research on them, because I thought North Carolina was going to open with them for a long time. They're very similar to North Carolina. Mm-hmm. They had a freshman quarterback who's really good last year to bring back a couple of good receivers. They lost their best receiver early to the NFL. They bring back two or three running backs who are all really good, and they're just like kind of okay on defense. And so I think because of that, like the line is decently high. I don't think Georgia Tech's offense is very good still. And I think UCF might be kind of sloppy out of the gates, like we have seen with a lot of teams playing their first game. So I'm counting on a first game dip there. And I'm not totally sure if I'm going to bet the under here, but I would lean that way, and I'd keep an eye on it if you're looking for a little extra action on this game.
Yeah, I could see Georgia Tech's offense struggling in this one. I mean, they were fortunate in the last game, and they got a lot of pressure on Florida State late. I don't want to overreact to Georgia Tech. Good win for them last week, but this feels like you can get some value on UCF for sure. No question about it. All right. We don't have every game the same. In fact, we've been in lockstep. So, well, actually, that's not true. We took opposite sides on the Miami-Louisville game. But BC Duke. Let's talk BC Duke here. So Duke laying 6 points at home against Boston College. First game for BC. We, of course, saw Duke last week. Hang around with Notre Dame. Ultimately lost by, what was it, 13? Lost by 13 or 14?
14, 27-13.
It was a 13 in there. So Duke laying 6 at home. What do you think about this one?
Yeah, I actually like Duke here, -6. Same kind of thing. I'm kind of banking on first game sloppiness from Boston College. Duke already has a game under their belt, so it kind of remains to be seen. We don't have enough data to say what the true impact of that is going to be this year in a weird offseason or a weird training camp, I guess. But I'm going to kind of play that angle if I can this weekend. I think Duke was scrappy against Notre Dame. Like you said, you know, hung around for a while. They were pretty close until late. I mean, Notre Dame pulled away in the fourth quarter of that game. Boston College breaking in a new quarterback. Ian Book's former backup at Notre Dame and Phil Dracovic. Mm-hmm. He's like very similar to Ian Book, like Ian Book light, like an Ian short story maybe, or Ian novella.
Ian poem.
Yeah. So anytime you've got Dave Cutcliffe against Ian novella, you like your chances. No, I like Duke -6. I'm going to ride that. I think they covered last week, and I like him to do it again.
All right. I like that. From now on, he's not Phil Jakovic. He is Ian Novella or Ian Poem. I kind of like Ian Poem, but whichever
Ian
one, Poem, you know.
Ian short story.
Dealer's choice. Wake Forest and NC State in this one. I'm actually going to lay 2.5 with NC State. I don't think Wake is very good. They were hammered last week. Poor Sam Hartman. That kid, it's actually funny. Dave Clawson and I were on the same wavelength because Hartman was getting rocked in the third quarter against Clemson, and there was a hit he took where they were down. I might have been 37-3 already. It was obviously a blowout, and I was like, in my head, they just need to take him out. Like they are putting him in harm's way for no reason. So they put out a different quarterback. I don't remember who he is, but they put out a backup for the last quarter and a half. Thankfully, Dave Clawson showed mercy because there's no reason to let Sam Hartman just thrown to the wolves for the last quarter and a half. But I still don't love Wake. And I actually think NC State, look, this team was devastated by injury last year. They were very young. They quit by the end of the season. They are better than the results indicated, especially later in the year last year.
No doubt. No doubt.
So
yep.
I think you're getting some value here on an NC State team that is, they're not good, but they're better than I think maybe what the public perception of them is right now. And look, let's face it, Dave Doran, outside of last year, has done a really good job at State. I mean, has put together winning teams year in and year out. I don't think NC State's going to win 7 games this year, but this is the kind of game I think they can win. And even though Wake, I mean, do we even call last week a warm-up? Like, that? What did they accomplish
by
playing Clemson?
Exactly. Yeah, by going out there and being tackling dummies.
Right.
I'm really interested to watch this game. I think it's one of the ones this weekend that I'm probably most interested in watching. I think it's going to be very interesting to see what NC State does look like. So I very much agree with you on a lot of that about them. I think they are not nearly as bad as they looked last year. I think they have a solid defense, certainly a good front seven. I think their secondary is suspect. Mm-hmm. TBD if Sam Hartman is really going to make them pay for that. I think they have an okay offensive line, a couple of really good running backs. I think Devin Leary has a very, very talented quarterback. And he brings most or all of his receivers back. So I think they should be better. I would lean towards NC State -2.5 as well if I had to bet this one.
All right, let's talk about Pitt and Syracuse. So Pitt is laying a huge number here. And
yep.
I don't love laying big numbers ever, especially with a team like Pitt. But, you know, I'm going to. I'm going to lay 21.5. Syracuse was not good last week against UNC. I mean, once UNC woke up, I mean, that game was over in a hurry. And they only had 202 yards of offense, 68 yards on the ground. And I think Pitt's defense is roughly as good as Carolina's. I mean, that's the strength mm-hmm. of Pittsburgh's team. And
sure.
I know Jalen Twyman's not playing for Pitt, and he was going to be their star. He's probably going to be a first-round draft pick on the defensive line. But Pitt, who played an FCS team last week, but it was 55-0. I did not realize this. They only played 10-minute quarters in the third to fourth quarter. So that game probably could have been, 69-76, something like that. You give them another 10 minutes.
Did you see the unfortunate gambling angle with that game?
Well, so the game doesn't count, right?
Correct.
Right.
If it has to be a full-length game. So the fact that they went to the 10-minute quarters for the second half made all bets void.
God, that is absolutely brutal.
Super unfortunate.
There was a game a few years ago, and I don't remember. I want to say it was a Florida game where something kind of like that happened, but it was like a weather cancellation, right? There was like 6 minutes to go in the game, and I mean Florida, whoever they were playing, and they covered, and because of rain or lightning, they just decided to cancel it, and all the bets were void. I'm pretty sure I had action on that game too, and
absolutely.
What
brutal.
Are you gonna do? You brutal. Nothing you can do there. That's a bad beat.
No,
hopefully
no,
SVP had that on his bad beats this week.
I bet he did. I think that's probably where I saw it. Anyway, Syracuse stinks. My mind immediately, which I hate how much I'm doing this year, but my mind immediately went to the under, but the over under is like 50 even. Which is relatively low, but
I
don't hate that either.
No.
In fact, that actually sounds too low. I need to maybe double check that. That sounds like it's whatever. No, it's 50. So I think that would be an interesting play here because I could see it being like really best case. Like, well, I guess 35-14 would put you right there. But Point being, I could see it being even less than that, you know, 28-7. I think Syracuse's defense was actually okay. Their defensive coordinator was decent. I think Pitt's offense is not all that explosive, though they are going to run the ball pretty effectively, I think, on Syracuse. So, yeah, I'm probably not going to touch it. It's still too many points for me for a team not known for really lighting up the scoreboard. If anything, I might toss the under in a teaser. I actually think I do like that. But otherwise, I don't hate the taking pick in that game.
The half point getting it past 21 makes me nervous. But in a teaser, you could tease this two ways, 14.5, under 57.
Ooh, yeah, we are big fans of the two-way teaser on
two-way,
this podcast.
Two-way teasers is my jam. All right, Ross, we got a couple more. Houston at Baylor. Season opener for both teams. We got Baylor -4. This game was just scheduled like yesterday. I think this is Baylor's third different team that were scheduled to open the season with. So
I love it.
A lot of changes in the air for Baylor. But hey, what is it? Oh, I screwed it up. What is it? Clear eyes, full hearts can't lose. God,
there he is.
As a diehard Friday Night Lights fan, I'm very disappointed in myself right now.
What are you doing there?
Yeah, I screwed that up.
Well,
what do you got?
Man, I hate it. I hate that I'm doing this. This is not a fun way to watch college football, but I like the under here, under 62. So,
scared money don't make money.
I'm sounding like a broken record. It's the first game for both teams. I think it's going to be sloppy a little bit, but more importantly, this is not the Art Briles Baylor team that I think America still thinks it is, that just scores a million points, plays no defense, and wins games 55-45. Look at some of their wins last year against some of the decent competition that they played. 21-13, 23-21, 31-12, 17-14, 24-10. A lot of games in the 30s and 40s. So there's some serious wiggle room there against a respectable opponent. To where, I think a 31-24 kind of game, super reasonable, and that still gives you a full touchdown and wiggle room on that under. So I'm going to bet the under in this game. I'm definitely tossing this in the teaser, get it to under 69, because why not? That's what I like in this one. I looked at it from a lot of different angles, and I kept coming back to the under.
Yeah, I mean, think about it. Baylor's defense was great last year. Now, they lost several key pieces off of it.
Sure.
I mean, James Lynch was an All-American. I think he's on the Vikings now. Bravion Roy is actually a Carolina Panther, along with the head coach, Matt Rhule. So they lost a couple key pieces off their defensive line, so defense is a little bit worse. Houston's defense was bad. I mean, Houston, they were 113th last year in scoring defense, gave up 34 points. But I'm with you. I am with you. Like, this is not Art Briles Baylor. You know, they do have Michael Brewer's little brother, Connor Brewer, calling the shots at quarterbacks. Actually a pretty good player, man. I was impressed with him last year. He's tough. Definitely tough. But Denzel Mims is gone. He was their stud wide receiver. He was drafted in the second round. He was drafted by the Jets, I believe. So, yeah, you lose some of your offensive firepower, some of your good pieces on defense. I don't know how good Baylor's going to be. I think this is kind of a rebuilding year. I wouldn't be surprised if Houston actually covers. I'm not going to bet it. But I would not be surprised if Houston won this ball game. Now, Houston had some issues of their own with, you know, Dana Holgerson's kind of got to get some control in that program. But I could see Baylor taking a step back. But I'll go with you like that. Under 62 does feel like a good bet. I'll go with my final game here. Let's go Citadel. I love these games. I love these games. Clemson is laying 44.5 against the Citadel on Saturday. Now, there's definitely some evidence with Alabama back in the day where Nick Saban is terrible against the number against FCS teams or even just low level, like group of five teams. Typically these kind of schools like Dabo's kind of the same way. They don't want to embarrass these small schools. They know they can, they have nothing to prove. They don't need to go win by 55, 60, 70 points. There's no reason to do that. This is a testing game. This is a glorified practice for some of the younger guys. Clemson last week against Wake, obviously Wake is better than the Citadel, but last week against Wake, the second group of guys didn't look that great. They were kind of sloppy. And I love DJ Uiagalelei, the backup quarterback. He's going to be an absolute freak show. Did you like that pronunciation?
Dude, you nailed it.
Yeah, I'm pretty good. They weren't that great, and I'm not convinced that Clemson, if they're up 31-0 and they pull the backups in, that they're going to cover a 44.5 point number. Remember Citadel a couple years ago did kind of hang around with Alabama, speaking of which. It was tied at halftime. I don't think that's going to happen again, but yeah, here's the number to know. So Clemson, obviously 3-0 against FCS teams the last 2 years, but 0-3 against the spread. Two of those games hit the under as well. But the last time they did cover against an FCS team, it was against the Citadel back in 2017. They covered a 46-point spread, winning 61-3. But I love backing these guys and these guys. I just think it's so fun. Maybe I like torturing myself, but when it's 42-3 in the, you know, fourth quarter with 6 minutes to go and you're watching the third string for Clemson trying to hang on against, the Citadel try to hang on against the third string from Clemson, I just think there's a little bit of fun in that. So anytime I can root for the big underdog, I'm going to do it. So, yeah, I'll go 44.5 on Citadel. I think that's all we got. Now, real quickly, because we didn't do this last week and this was my bad, let's recap your teaser. So you kind of mentioned them, but give me your I guess it's what you got, a three-way teaser this week?
Yeah, three for sure. I'll probably actually end up adding like a fourth, fifth, or sixth. But for now, UCF -7.5 down to 0.5.
Yep.
Baylor and Houston, we're going to go with the under from 62-69, and Pitt and Syracuse, I like the under from 50-57. I think those are the ones that jumped out in the teaser zone. Right off the bat, might even toss Miami up to 9.5. That's certainly one that's on there, and then maybe even adding the under in that Georgia Tech UCF game as well. But there might be others that come up. Realistically, I know exactly what's going to happen. I'm going to go on tilt because I'm a lot of money in the hole this week for the universe, and I'm going to try to get it all back.
You just bet these games straight up. Eventually, you're going to learn. You'll make more money just betting the games.
I'm going to bet them all straight up this week. And I'm going to probably put them in a parlay. And they're all going to lose, but they all would have won if I teased them. That's what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Just watch. Mark my words.
I usually hedge my bets, and I'll bet all my games. And then I'll just throw like $5 or something, just a small number.
But just in case I get them all right.
On a parlay. And then I also put some on a teaser so that I can't get mad at myself if the parlay doesn't hit, but the teaser would. So I try to like cover myself and end up losing both of them anyway.
I like that move, actually.
All right.
That's probably what I'll do.
Those are your teasers. Real quickly, I got Citadel +44.5. I got Pitt -21.5. I got NC State -2.5 against Wake. I got UCF. We both have UCF -7.5 against Georgia Tech. And then I got Louisville -2.5 against Miami. We got some real live action this weekend, Ross. I can't wait for it. Sorry, Christine Brennan. Don't tune in this week. Shield your eyes from all the football. The carnage on the field this weekend.
Together, we will get through this, Christine.
Oh man, but I know Dave. I know one person who'll be watching. David Hookstead.
The king of Wisconsin football and our savior.
All right, that's going to do it for us. Until next week, he's Rossi Three Stacks. I'm Josh. We'll see y'all later.
Yep.